Viewers, listeners, welcome to another episode of Blighty Talks Bricks. My guest today is someone that I've never met before. In fact, we met about 3 minutes ago. It would be unfair if I say I hadn't done any research at all. I have, but I had to stop because this man's research is amazing. This guy has been so active, so prominent in what he's done, and he's got some amazing stories. So I'm super excited that he's here today, and I thank him for his time. But Blighty Talks Bricks is to do with the housing crisis. And my guest today that is someone that actually lives on a narrowboat. I'm not sure where this conversation is going to go, but I am really excited. I'm looking forward to it. Adam Lind, welcome to Blighty Talks Bricks. How are you?
I'm very good, very grateful to be here.
Well, it's lovely to see you. You look very tanned. I'm assuming that's you're sitting on the back of the boat, sunning yourself.
Yeah, usually on the top of the boat, actually.
Oh, you go on the top. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I've got to get my bearings. Absolutely, yeah, I get that. First question, how did you get into living on a barge? Because I think it's super cool.
Yeah, well, I feel like the story kind of really starts from my birth, but I'm not going to take you back all the way that far. But I think the way we ended up living on a boat was I met my wife at university. We've been together 12 years. And after university, we decided that we weren't ready to kind of join, you know, corporate life or the mainstream life. So we decided to set ourselves like to go traveling. Yep. So we set ourselves this challenge where we wanted to hitchhike from London to India. That was the
London to India.
Yeah, that was the plan.
Okay, that's ambitious.
And the idea was we didn't want to use a plane, a train or a bus, and we just wanted to basically rely on the kindness of strangers to take us there, much to our family's dismay, who were like absolutely petrified about the idea. But we just kind of like, we hadn't saved much money, but we knew we wanted to travel and we were thinking to fly all the way to like Australia or Thailand or Bali or these kind of like, you know, hotspot destinations. And I remember looking at this map and just thinking, we're going to miss so much in between, like all this kind of less trodden land. So we're like, why don't we just do it by land? So we did this journey and maybe we can go more into this as we go. But we were on the road for about 5 years.
5 years?
Yeah. We were on the road for 5 years, okay. And we eventually came back to the UK. And it was mad because we hadn't been in the UK for so long. We had such a like nomadic tendency now, almost like running through our veins, that we knew we still wanted to move around because we were so used to moving around. But at the same time, we were craving some like roots and some stability. So the idea came up about living on a boat. And I mean, I grew up in London, so I used to see boats a lot, like at Camden or in East London. Yeah. And I never even knew that people lived on them. I remember the canals always being quite like an idyllic place to be or like hang out with my friends. Yeah. But I never even thought people might be living in these boats. So the idea came up. We still didn't have much money, so we just took a loan, bought the boat, and was like, this is perfect because now we can travel around but have this kind of roots. Like we have a consistent bed, a consistent kitchen, a bathroom. I remember like when we bought plates for the first time, it was like the most magical experience.
Because of your 5 years of traveling.
We just had a backpack then and a tent, really. Like we'd do some like longer stays with like if we were on a volunteer project, but we actually didn't really use paid accommodation either through that time. We would either wild camp or use this amazing website called Couchsurfing where local people would want to host travelers in their home as like a kind of cultural exchange. So yeah, we probably stayed with over, gosh, close to 1,000 random people over like 28
really?
Countries. It was quite the human experience.
Just an automatic question that comes to me, maybe because I watched too many scary films when I was growing up. You go to a stranger's house, you've never met them.
Yeah.
Did you have some situations when they very kindly taken you, give you think, I'm not getting out of here alive? Or is that because my mind is taking me to these terrible films I've watched?
It's really interesting because growing up, I always was taught this term like stranger danger.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, don't like talk to strangers, don't accept candy from a stranger, and definitely like never get in a car with a stranger.
Yep.
So when we told our family, like I say, we were going to do this trip and basically break all those rules and almost like put ourselves in these situations. But I've always had this inherent belief that like most people in the world are good.
I agree.
But because of maybe the way like mainstream media has gone or the way things are portrayed on the news, we've kind of developed a mindset where actually we're quite scared of the people around us, which has created a really disconnected society.
Yep.
So to answer your question, there were a few hairy moments. However, the reason I am happy
Chainsaw Massacre comes to mind.
Yeah. And also to be fair, even the hairy moments were a bit like, it could have been our perception of like judging something wrong. We never felt particularly like in danger, maybe once. But it's also like, we had thousands and thousands of the opposite of, like, not just kind people, like people that, you know, they pick us up on the side of the road with our backpacks. They don't know us. And they're like, where are you heading tonight? We're like, we don't know. They're like, oh, please, like, come back to stay with these families for like a week. Sometimes, like, get to know their children, like take us to these like magical waterfalls or hikes that we never would have seen. Yeah. And I remember saying to my mum at one point, like, if I get killed hitchhiking, this was like a few years in, you better not tell people not to hitchhike.
Did you actually say
yeah, because yeah. I was like, we've had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of kind experiences, that if one of these kill me off, then I don't want you to become an advocate that people shouldn't do it.
I'm envious because you live on a boat. I'm envious, even more envious now, because I'm going to Scotland tomorrow, and if I didn't know where I was going, and if I didn't know it was nice, I would be so much anxiety. I'd be panicking.
Yeah.
It's crazy, and what you're saying, I've probably had more dangerous situations than you've had, and I've never hitchhiked.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I've always had this like maybe inherent trust within me. I don't know where that comes from, but just, I think I've noticed from when I was young, I stopped watching the news quite young.
Yeah, good idea.
And I felt, because everything we were being portrayed was so negative, and I used to remember thinking, like, if the local news came on and it was like, I don't know, man stabbed in local high street or something.
Which is on the news every day.
Yeah, and I'm like,
you'd never go out, would you?
If that's news, fair enough, but then why isn't it also news that, like, I don't know, old woman loses her purse and someone finds it, looks at the ID and takes it back to her home. I'm like, yeah. Neither of these, a man getting stabbed in my local high street and someone helping this old woman, they're not global news. Like, I know we need to know about the catastrophes going on a larger scale.
Absolutely.
But on these individual kind of person by person case, if a guy getting robbed or stabbed is news, then why aren't we also hearing the nice things that happen within the same community? But like, what I used to think, it would be funny because they'd get to the end of the news and then the cheery bit would be sport. And I'm like, that's the positive news we hear, right? So I think once I eradicated that out of my mind, I was able to, I guess, be less scared of the world, maybe.
What age did you have this kind of take on life?
I think I lost my father when I was 17.
It's never a good age at any time, but that's traumatic.
Yeah, and I mean, it's taken me a long time to speak about it in this way, but actually I'm very, very grateful for the experience, because I believe if it wasn't through like grieving my father, I wouldn't have gone on to hitchhike the world, live on a boat or any of this. And yeah. I think, you know, at the age when all my friends are going out and like all they care about is like getting with girls at nightclubs and stuff like this, I was kind of thrust into this like state of grief, really, and all these questions in my mind were coming up, like, kind of, what is the point of life? Because like, he was here and now he's gone, and like, where's he gone, and all this kind of existential stuff that comes with grief. And I really just remember this pinnacle moment of feeling like, I've literally got one life on this planet, and I'm not gonna do anything that I don't want to do. And that sometimes comes across a bit like, ooh, like, but I don't mean in like a non-compassion way, I want to have respect for everyone around me, but in terms of like doing what I'm meant to do, I just knew from that moment it was never going to work for me, because life all of a sudden really started to feel like a game.
Brothers, sisters?
I've got an older sister, yeah.
And what does your sister do? Does she like you in that way?
She hates me. No, she absolutely loves me. I'm really lucky. My sister's 8 years older than me. And so my dad was an alcoholic throughout at least the whole of my life.
Okay.
And me, my sister and my mother were kind of like a three. We're like a little wolf pack.
So he sort of isolated himself slightly from that situation.
For sure. I mean, growing up, I didn't have as much compassion as I do for it now, but alcoholism is an addiction. And I think it's one that doesn't get enough addiction status. I sometimes say, like, if he would have been addicted to like cocaine or heroin, it would have been maybe easier, because it's like an illegal substance. But because an alcoholic is addicted to a substance that's everywhere, you know, it's a birthday, let's pop a bottle of champagne. It's like, especially in our culture in this country, it's so glorified that I feel like alcoholics are seen as a bit like, oh, just stop drinking, you know. But like, I'm quite into like psychology and the mind, and it's a strong addiction. So yeah, I think my sister's very supportive of what I do.
Does she travel like you?
No. She lives definitely more of a kind of normal life, I guess. She's also very entrepreneurial. She has her own really successful business. And I think that's a trait my sister and I got from my dad. Now, my dad was a very interesting, charismatic man. When he met my mum, he said he's going to be a millionaire by the time he was 40. And he just had all these ideas of things that he would do. And I think if he wasn't an addict, then maybe he would have reached these traits. And I meet some people now and they're like, oh, you're so much like your dad. So maybe some of those traits are genetic, because like I say, my sister and I have this kind of, yeah, entrepreneurial spark. And I guess in a similar way, just do things maybe on our own terms.
So how did we get to the boat? You came back. You then had, where did you choose your boat? Where did, I mean, a boat's, I mean, this is a few years back, I'm assuming.
Yeah, we've been living on the boat for 4 years. It was actually my mother-in-law. When we first came back, we obviously had nowhere to live. So we were living with my mother-in-law. And I don't know, maybe it was a way for her to get rid of us. But she was like, have you guys started thinking about anything yet, you know? And the idea came up. And at first, when I said to my wife, what do you think about living on a boat? She was like, no, like, I need somewhere to grow my own vegetables. I need somewhere to do yoga. And I was like, okay, fair enough. Maybe it's not going to work. And then I went on YouTube and I just started to look at people that lived on boats. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, hold on a minute. Like,
there's this, a community, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, at first I didn't know this either, but I was like, look, this girl's doing yoga in her boat and this guy's growing vegetables on top of his roof. Like, yeah, maybe there's ways we can make this work. So we were very lucky and a friend lent us a boat for 4 weeks because he was going to France.
Okay.
It kind of all happened.
Static or one that's, because you get lots of people who are on boats that are static, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, most of them can move unless they're more like a houseboat.
Yeah.
But his was one that moved, and that was part of the deal that we had to move it for him whilst living on it. And I remember we spent just 3 days on this boat, the first 3 days, and we were just like, yeah, like, this is the life for us. I mean, being that close to nature is really a beautiful experience. And what we found very quickly that we had no idea was, is this community, like, it kind of reminded us of traveling again, because people seem to have, it's like time slows down on the canals. Like, people have more time for you. People want to engage in conversation with you. And as you were alluding to earlier, like, when I come back to London and I get on the train and it's like, I'm sitting, like, you know, arm to arm with someone and we don't even exchange as much of a smile.
No.
And it's like, but I don't blame those people, because we've become such a disconnected society that people are like, you know, we were built like for connection. Like, human connection is such an integral part of our nervous system.
Through COVID.
Yeah. And it's such a necessary thing that it's hard to find in a city. And it's sometimes even hard to find on your own street. Like, my father-in-law was saying how he doesn't know any of his neighbours, you know, and these people live side by side with you. Whereas on the canals, there's this kind of like camaraderie that, you know, the guy in the boat next door me, he might not have the same interests as me, the same music taste, the same fashion sense, or any interests the same. But because we both live on a boat, we're like bound to this community together. And when I say people like help each other, I've never experienced this level of
really
help. Yeah.
In terms of anything, you've run out of sugar, you've run out of milk, or you've got a problem with your boat.
All of it. Like, some of our closest friends on the canal, a couple quite a lot older than us, we met them because we were cruising up a canal towards North Wales, and they had kind of overtaken us because we were just going quite slow. Like, we're having some, our engine's a bit slow anyway, it's a fairly old boat. And they cruise past us, like, you do the old hello. And then, like, about 10 minutes later, I saw them kind of walking back up the towpath. And they were concerned that because we were going a bit slow, we may have an engine problem. So they
literally pulled up,
tied up, which is like, you know, takes some effort just to come and be like, are you guys all right? Like, do you need us to check your engine? And it's that kind of thing that you see on a day-to-day basis on the canals, like, where we've been moored over the winter, that we got quite bad floods on the river. So I'm talking like waist high, can't step out the boat unless you've got a little canoe. Yet every day, all the boaters around us would like, someone would bake a cake and get in their canoe and just come and knock on and be like, banana bread, anyone? Or
really?
Does anyone need me to take their dog over to the little patch to do a wee? And it's this kind of communal living. And this level of human connection is something for me is like so important in my life.
So when you, going back to your, I'm going to say you've got itchy feet because you're always moving.
Yeah.
Do you actually get to anywhere where you drop anchor, so to speak, you tie your boat up, you think, I really like this location, I don't want to move from it?
Yeah, it happens. Like, the way our license works is we have to move every 2 weeks for the license we pay. However, you can pay like an extra fee if you wanted to find like a more of a permanent spot. So for the first 3 years of living on the boat, we were what they call continuous cruisers, moving every 2 weeks. But for the last 9 months, we've been in one spot.
Right.
And actually, as of last week, have just given up.
You're
the
not
spot.
Putting roots down on the quiet, are you?
No, we've given up the mooring now. But again, it's this thing of like, I learned during my travels that actually I feel too much freedom can actually make you feel trapped at times.
Okay.
As a child, I used to suffer quite badly with something called intrusive thoughts.
What does that mean to me?
Intrusive thoughts are basically these kind of unwanted, invasive thoughts that are really repetitive. Ways I like to describe it that some people can relate to is like, you can maybe be on a train platform and you'll have this random thought of like, wonder what would happen if I just like threw myself on the tracks.
Okay.
Like,
well, I have that with heights.
Yeah. So you're not suicidal, you don't want to do it, but the thoughts
the
come up.
The feeling of what it would feel like.
Yeah. Or like I used to get it as a kid, I'd be in the back of the car and I'd be like, I wonder what would happen if I just swung this car door open like on the motorway. And they're really normal, everyone has them, but mine developed into like quite incessant and would happen every single day. And they got to the point where I could be like walking home from school and my mind would be like, if I don't run and touch that lamppost in the next 10 seconds, my mum's going to like drop dead. And I'd like have to run to this lamppost. And the context of this story is when we were traveling again, we'd kind of, you know, 4 years in, we were like making a bit of money on the road. My wife does like circus skills. We were doing some like busking and like making jewelry. And like, we'd kind of found freedom, right? Like we weren't tied to any roots. We weren't, had no mortgage, no bills. We had no time. Some days we had no idea what day or time it was. We were just completely on our own rhythm.
Really? Oh, it sounds amazing.
It does sound amazing. And it was, but that level of freedom almost allowed me to feel like, get in my head quite a lot, and these intrusive thoughts started to come back like thick and fast. And really the idea of like kind of what is the point, like what is the point of anything really, and it got quite dark. And there was this pinnacle moment where we were in Bali and I was like lying in this hammock drinking a cocktail and my intrusive thoughts were really, really bad. And my wife took a photo of me like on this hammock with a cocktail and like we put it online and everyone started being like, wow, like freedom, you guys have found freedom. And I just remember seeing these comments come in and just thinking like, I'm so trapped.
I was just gonna say, you felt trapped in another
so
way.
And I think for me it was like, I hadn't lost purpose, but like one of the reasons we came home was, I think the idea of maybe not having roots, but having like projects or things to work on. And the same way with the boat, when we were moving too much, it's like, it's great because you're always moving.
But you're trapped
like,
again.
Yeah, like why? Mm. So this idea, we planted these roots for 9 months to kind of, you know, hone in on projects, hone in on things that are really important to us. And now we're ready to kind of like spread our wings again. So I think what I've learned is this balance between like, I think freedom is found when you have this balance between like routine and spontaneity, because I thought I wanted to live a life, you know, of like no discipline, no rules. Like, why would I, you know, have anything that society wants me to have? And it's been a journey to kind of, yeah, find the balance between the two.
Do we, what you're saying in a roundabout way is even though you wanted that to see the world, you wanted to travel, you didn't want the responsibility, but you still needed some form of order, even if that order was actually, I'm not staying here, I'm going traveling again.
Yeah.
And then when you were traveling, actually, I need to stop again.
I think it's discipline. I think I used to resent the word discipline so much.
Can be used in strange ways, can't it?
Well, I've always had such a negative connotation with it. And then as part of our travels, we lived in India for a year and we lived in this ashram for 30 days. And the guru there was like, still to this day, like one of my greatest teachers. And every day he'd give us these lectures and he'd always be like, if you have this much discipline, you'll have this much happiness. If you have this much discipline, you'll have this much happiness. And he'd go on and on. Really? And I'd be like, why is this guy talking so highly of discipline? Like, that's not me.
That's what you wanted to get away from in everyday random life.
And I think what he was saying is like, discipline comes in so many forms. Maybe that's like self-discipline of like, what's your morning routine or what habits have you created, or the discipline to know like what project you're going to do next or whatever it is you want to do. I think bringing discipline in my life, which is something, like I say, I rejected for so long, has been the way I've been able to kind of bridge the gaps between the two worlds that I want to live in.
So moving on to living on the boat, one of the things when I walk down the where I live, I can walk up and down the River Lee. I always wonder about the width element. Does it get claustrophobic? Do you bump into each other?
Like inside the space?
Inside
you mean?
The space.
I mean, I guess you climatize to it. But yeah, I mean, it's narrow, but it's not something that's ever bothered me personally. It's definitely a narrow space.
And in terms of, I mentioned just before we came on to record, what about storing stuff? And you said there's some secret, and we're not giving too many secrets away. Because I've got a lot of gear, where would I put some of my stuff?
Well, I'm very lucky in the fact that my wife is like a DIY wizard. So she's been able to build the most insane storage solutions you could ever imagine. But I think you'd be surprised the way boats are built are, for example, everything you see has storage in, like every step also flips up. every sofa, every bed, every crevice has like very clever storage solutions. But at the same time, it's quite a cathartic cleansing process when I speak to people that have moved from a house to a boat.
Get rid of all of their stuff.
Get rid of stuff you don't need. And the amount of people that say they don't miss the stuff that they accumulate.
I did a bit of clearing out the weekend. I was looking for a shirt. I couldn't find it. And some of the stuff I came off of, what the bloody hell have I still got that for?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I've never really put much value on like material possessions. So that part wasn't that difficult for me. And also we didn't have to do this whole cleansing process because we'd gone from living out of a backpack to living on
a
boat.
You looked in, it was probably a lot of space for you, wasn't
it? We actually had to buy everything.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have all of the, I don't know, bed sheets and cutlery and things like this.
So you mentioned about your wife who is very good at DIY.
She is.
Am I right in saying that you've just done a refurb on something else that moves?
We have.
Which is like a little home on wheels?
Yeah, so we bought like an old Peugeot Boxer, and because they're really popular for van conversions. My wife's a bit crazy, and it's like as soon as she felt like she'd finished the renovations on the boat, she was like craving picking up the tools again. Yeah. So she was like, I really want to renovate a van. So we bought this van at an auction, and yeah, she's just spent the last 6 months converting it into another home on wheels, which we're hoping to do like sometime in the boat, sometime in the van. The idea is to reach places that the canals don't, so the coast. Yeah. We want to spend a lot of time maybe in Devon and Cornwall and Scotland and the lakes and maybe Europe again. We'd love to go back to Turkey actually in the van. That was probably our favorite country.
And is all of the time, I mean, security doesn't bother you, does it? For your travelling, because you did that 5 years on the road, that doesn't seem to bother you, does it?
No, a lot of people say, like, do you feel safe on the boat? And I'm like, yeah, but I also felt safe sleeping in a gas station in Bulgaria, so maybe I'm not the best judge of the scale.
What's the negative side? I mean, I'm assuming there are some. You're on your narrow boat. I'm very envious. I need to take one for a week.
You can take mine if you want.
Well, thank you very much. Very kind of you. What's the negative side to it?
Yeah, so I always say like every lifestyle has pros and cons, right?
Yep.
I'd say some of the cons that people find are probably, you know, I guess it's your modern day luxuries. You don't have unlimited water. You have to deal with your own toilet waste. Like, I guess you have to be more mindful of all consumption, like electricity and things like that. It's not as luxurious, you know, there's no like central heating, which you can actually install now. But I think these pro and con thing, it's all about perception, right? So yeah. It's like, I remember there could be some winter's mornings where, you know, you wake up and you're cold and you've got to put the fire on. But I feel like through, I guess, work I've done on myself, it's all like a mindset shift. So I now kind of enjoy it. It feels a bit more like primitive. So, you know, I have to wake up and start the fire to like warm the home for like me and my wife and my dog.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, some mornings I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. Like, I wish I just had a button to switch on. But yeah. I'm quite mindful of like, you know, I've chose this lifestyle. And even with like water and electricity, we try to be fairly, I guess, eco-conscious where we can.
Yeah.
And it's funny now, like if I go to a friend's house and they're like doing the washing up and they're just like leaving the tap running, it's not a problem because I used to do the same. But now because
you'll be going, whoa, 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 whoa.
Yeah, but they have unlimited water, so it kind of doesn't matter. But you know, you have to be more mindful, I'd say, of everything you do. Also space, as you mentioned, two of us both work for ourselves in a very small space. Of course we get on each other's nerves at times, like any marriage.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I was just...
Oh, yeah, of course we do. And this is a funny thing, like, with my work being online, you know, often we'll get these messages sometimes of, like, we wish we had a relationship like yours, or, like, you two are the perfect couple. And don't get me wrong, I love my wife, and I'm so happy with our relationship. But, like, any relationship, you know...
There are days and times.
Of course there is. And there's this weird thing, I guess, as well about showing up on social media, only showing like the positives. But I always say, if I'm having a dispute or an argument with my wife and I was to get the phone out and start filming it, do you know what I mean? I don't think she'd be best pleased.
No.
So it's also this balance of like definitely showing your authentic self and showing what goes on. But of course, you're more wanting to share when you're in a good mood. I was just like, I always imagine this thing of like Lauren and I having an argument and me being like, oh, hold on, babe, let me just film it. I mean, I'd get clobbered.
Well, I suppose it might kill the argument.
True.
Or it might start another one.
I might try it.
Yeah. But yeah, well, don't say I suggest.
Well, no,
if it works, it's my idea. But I can, from just talking to you, I feel energy. I can feel that you're contented. How do you manage to do that? How do you, I know you've said about, you know, the traumatic situation of dad passing, but how do you, because one of the things, I struggle with my emotional wellness. And the guests we have, and I always try to find out what some people call it tricks, some people call it mechanisms. What, do you have to click into tricks and mechanisms, or is it just you go, oh, for fuck's sake, get on with it?
It's a really good question. I think every day is different. I think I really do believe that adversity is a gift. And I think the adverse things that have happened...
Adversity is a gift. I mean, just those words to me is an amazing thing that you can say that.
Yeah.
Because most people go, please let me get through today without any adversity. And in a strange way, your subconscious, and you're openly speaking about it, is you're embracing it.
For sure. I think adversity is like an opportunity. Everything's a lesson, right? Like when we were doing up this van, we were like really close to being finished and we were on the way to get the last bits of the electrics fitted, and we had a crash, and the crash was quite bad. They wanted to write off the van, you know, we'd been working on this for so long.
And that was your wife's little baby, wasn't it?
Yeah. Luckily she was the one driving it.
And that would have been a big row.
Yeah. And, you know, at first, obviously, we were in, like, panic mode, and we're like, no, I can't believe this, da-da-da-da-da. But actually, very, very quickly, I think, just through the way we've gone to learn about ourselves, moving into acceptance, I think acceptance is key to anything that happens. And very quickly, we accepted it, and we both knew that there would be a lesson in this, and there was. And to be honest, we'd been taking on so much. We'd been working on this van, working on so many things, like going 100 miles an hour, really living in a way that
sort of
wasn't
suited to us.
The way
that you wanted to escape or not get into in the 100%.
Beginning. And this crash meant it just stopped us. Yeah. And what was amazing was we'd had these next 2 weeks booked out to finish off the electrics, finish off everything. And then we crash. We'd like locked up the boat, like turned everything off, knowing we'd be gone for 2 weeks. That night we're back on the boat with 2 weeks with a free calendar, which very rarely happens. And like the way my wife and I were able to reconnect, the way we were able to move back into...
More time for each other, more understanding of each other.
100%.
Stop and smell the flowers on your journey.
Because it is, you know, we move so fast. And again, like it was an adverse situation that happened. And I think very quickly we can move into this like, why me, why me? I think one of the things I really like is this idea of cause and effect. So often when a situation happens to us, we can either be in cause or in effect. So when we're at cause, it's like that person, my wife, my boss, whatever, said something to me and now I'm like angry, right? Mm-hmm. Or like that guy did something to me, did it, and now I'm angry because they did that to me. Whereas when we move into effect, we want to be the one that's chosen to feel this way. So that person's done this to me and I'm allowing myself to feel like this, because then we take back control, right?
Yep.
If we believe we're going through life like, poor me, because all this stuff has happened to me, then it's like we've lost all control because we're at the mercy of what everyone else is going to do.
Because you become so negative, don't you?
For sure, but more so like everyone's doing these things and I'm allowing myself to be annoyed by it means I can then allow myself to change my mindset towards it. It's like you need to take back the power and not be a victim, I guess, because that's been like a really helpful tool for me when things go wrong. It's like if we're going to blame everything else outside of ourselves, then we've lost all control over... You know,
the moment you lose control, you're on a downward spiral, aren't you?
100%. And it's like, even going back to the grief thing, it's like, why me? Like, why did this have to happen to me? Like, it hasn't really happened to me. Like, it's happened. And I now can choose how I'm going to respond to this situation. Another thing is this idea of like responding or reacting. So often in life, something happens and we react. And when we think about the word react, it's like this knee-jerk, quick reaction. Yeah. Whereas when we respond to something, it's more of a well thought out, calmer, taking a moment response. So often if I'm faced with a difficult situation, I'm like, okay, you want to react, but let's try and respond. And even just these little tools, I guess you said some people have these hacks, I think have really helped me to, yeah. And also, I definitely don't want to be on here making out I'm the perfect person. Like, I have days
where...
No,
that's me, by the way.
I thought so. I have days where, you know, I feel fucking terrible and I don't listen to any of my own advice. I was doing some mental health coaching for a while. And I remember at the end of some sessions, they'd be like, God, like, you must have it all figured out. And like maybe even people listening to this, I'm talking, I'm like, yeah, if I took all my own advice, I'd be like the perfect guy.
Well, I mean, we're still human beings, aren't we?
Of course. And I think there's this level of awareness again of like having all these tools when you need them, but also like having allowances for days when you are just going to feel like really shit, and that's okay as well.
And that's okay as well, yeah. You mentioned about work. What would be your weekly job? What would be something that generates some income? What would you say that you do for a living?
I would say that I'm a content creator, which has kind of also beautifully happened by accident. Like when we were doing this hitchhiking travels, we weren't really on social media so much. And then when we came back to the UK and we bought the boat, I started making some videos. It was lockdown and I was making like some videos, putting them on my Instagram account. The Instagram account was actually private at the time, so only people I chose could see it. I think there was maybe like 500 people on there. And we were
making... You know a lot of people.
Apparently. And we were documenting a lot of the renovation just for like friends and family to watch. And then I noticed like day by day, I'd be getting messages from like old friends and random people being like, oh, I'm absolutely loving this. And then it would go on to people saying things like, I remember this one girl that I went to primary school with that I've not spoke to in years. And she said, me and my husband wait every night to get into bed to watch what you and Lauren have been doing
that's
on the boat
because
it makes us feel happy. And I said to Lauren, I was like, wow, like this is actually doing something good outside of us, right? So then people were like, please make it public. Like, I want to share it with my auntie or I want to share it with my cousin. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I want people watching me.
And then, especially in your home. It's bad enough in a studio.
And then I was like, do you know what? I'll do it. And then, I mean, I'm very grateful. It just kind of got bigger and bigger and bigger. And at the time, I didn't know that it could become an income stream and a job. And then, it's kind of built up from there. And I feel really grateful to do it as a job, actually.
And what's the, I'm going to say ambitions, I don't know, that might be a word you might not like, but what's the ambition, what's the goal with it now? What's the aim to where your business is now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not, don't have an aversion to the word ambition. I am definitely try to kind of go with the flow, because I think there is an idea of like, when we chase, we're never going to be content with what we have. However, I guess the idea is just to keep sharing my message authentically. Like, I'm quite lucky because people are drawn to what I do because the boat is quite a niche. But actually, there's a lot more. I want to talk a lot more about, you know, mental health, particularly amongst men. I like to showcase stuff I do in like regards to like cooking and relationships and just showing up as myself and hoping that, I guess, people enjoy watching it.
Well, you're obviously a giver. You obviously care about the world. And I know one of the things that you've got your own little charity project. Do you want to tell the viewers and listeners what that is?
Yeah, sure. So as I mentioned, we spent quite a long period of time in India. And when we were there, we met this amazing group of women who in Rajasthan, and they're Rajasthani gypsies. And without going too much into detail, the kind of caste system in India...
I've been to India, so
is really dramatic.
It is dramatic.
If you're born into a certain lineage or surname or
that's
culture...
That's what you've got to do for the rest of your life kind of thing.
Your cards have been dealt. You can't go into certain shops. And however successful you become amongst yourself, you'll never be allowed in certain spaces.
Crazy, isn't it?
It's really crazy. And we were really unaware of it before we moved there. And we just really fell in love with this group of women. And the first time we went to India and met them, there was a few of them that were like just sleeping outside. So at that moment, we'd paid to build them just like a tent to live in, and hadn't stayed in touch with them when we left. And that was kind of that, but we'd think about them all the time. And then about a year ago, we returned to India and went back there thinking like, will they still be there? Will they remember us? Like, who knows? Like, you know, maybe they've moved on. They were still there and definitely remembered us. And, you know, at this point, we weren't still traveling. We'd come back. We'd kind of started this Instagram. We had a bit of a following. We had more money to support them in a way. And I just remember thinking like, you know, we could potentially like build them a house.
Yeah.
So I didn't tell them any of this, but
that's ambition, by the way.
That is ambition. And I made some inquiries about how much it would cost to build them a house. And I was told it would be £5,000. And I just decided, like, we got back to our hotel where we were staying that night, and I said to Lauren, I'm going to, like, post a bit about this story on my Instagram and just see how my community react to it. because I'm really grateful. I've definitely made a lot of friends with people that have followed me that I know I've now met in person, and it feels like a real community. And I said, this is what I'm thinking to do. I put a little GoFundMe link on there, went to bed that night, woke up, and we'd raised all the money.
All of the money.
Really? And it was like, still when I talk about it now, like my heart is so full because, you know, what was amazing, the response as well, people actually being so grateful that I said, you know, 5,000 of you just give £1, we can change these people's lives. And that's essentially...
When you put it that way, it's quite amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, a pound. It's like, what's a pound to us, right? Yeah. And most of the donations were a pound. Like, there was some bigger ones. And I love this idea that how many people emailed and messaged saying, like, thank you for letting me be such a direct part of, like... Because, you know, you give to charity and it's like... You don't always know where the money's going.
No, you don't.
So they're like, we've given £1 and then they've literally followed the journey. The house is now built. They're living there. They're safe. And yeah, it's just it's been a really, you know, probably one of the biggest perks since starting the Instagram page that came out of it.
And will you go back again?
I would love to. Like, we still speak a few times a week. I FaceTimed them actually earlier today because we've got them like a phone now and stuff.
Right.
I would always love to go back there, but it's, you know...
Costs getting there, and you've got other things to do. What is your wife's DIY? What the projects are finished? The van's done now,
pretty much.
Yeah, and so you'll start your travels again, will you? In the van this time.
In all of it, actually. This Saturday we're going to start cruising down south. The plan is to head maybe through London and down towards Bath and Bristol, and then kind of move the van with us as we go. Hopefully, explore the coast a bit, and just see what life brings, I guess.
I've been touched by your personality. You have an enthusiasm with a calmness that just makes me... I can tell in my voice I'm just feeling a bit calmer. How do people get to you? Because I've had a few people reach out to me, some people I don't know, talking about some of the dramas and problems I've had. How do people get to you and how do they see... Because there'll probably be some people when this podcast comes out in a few weeks' time are going to go... I want to know more. So how do they get to... Because I think it's important. I think there are people out there, particularly men, particularly older men. You know, my generation was a generation that it wasn't cool to say that you had issues. How do people reach out just to seek a bit of... Even if it's not about contacting you, just to actually get some of your wisdom. Because I'm getting some of your wisdom.
You're very kind. I mean, in a practical way, my Instagram page is probably the best way. It's called adam.floatinghome. Anyone can always message me. It's interesting you mention about men your age, because when I was doing this mental health coaching, I'd say the majority of my clients were men over the age of maybe like 40.
Yeah.
And it was such a like beautiful space to be in, because it's like some of the most simple tools of even just like allowing them to be vulnerable was just such a like, you saw such like interesting quick changes. So yeah, I guess also whether it's not reaching out to me, just yeah, I don't know. I've always been quite an open book. Like, it comes quite easy to me to just pour my heart out to anyone that wants to listen to it. I think that's testament to probably being raised by two women.
Possibly.
But yeah, just having that courage to speak to someone. But yeah, I'm always open for a chat.
Well, I said to you when we sat down that time would go quickly. I could sit here and talk to you because I haven't even started with my little cards here. I mean, I think I might have got 50% of them done. But I think that what you said there is amazingly interesting. Great food for thought. I am definitely... Can I have two barges and put them together so I can get some of my gear on it?
Well, you can
just
get...
Just tie them up. Can you get double ones?
You can get wide beams. Yeah, they're amazing. I'll show you some after.
Can I get through the lock easy?
Yeah.
Then?
You're slightly more limited as to where in the country you can go. You kind of have to choose the south or the north. But you won't believe the interior of some
just
of these
wide
boats.
Just got to convince my wife to come with me on this journey. I'm not so sure she's going to see the same stuff. But being serious, I've really enjoyed sitting here talking with you.
Likewise.
It's been great fun. The thought of not having anywhere to stay tonight still would scare the living daylights out of me. Fortunately, I'm going home. But I've loved your company. I think lots of things that you say. I can see now why you've got such a big following. And I certainly believe what you're doing for men and older men. They do find it difficult to open up. And I think I've had this conversation. Opening up to your friends is difficult. Opening up to your family is even harder. And just for some, you know, I know some guys that are very strong, but could do with just a little bit of an outlet, even if it's just looking at something online just to give them the heads up. But I've really enjoyed your company. Thank you very much for finding the time to come on Blighty Talks Bricks. I've got a funny feeling at the end of today, Coral's going to say to me, "We've got to get Adam back. We've got to get Adam back." So it's been lovely.
Oh, thank really you so much it. For having me.
Cheers. Viewers, listeners, Blighty's in the market for not only one barge, but two barges timed together. I hope you've enjoyed the time that we've spent here with Adam. I have. Just an amazing man. Say hi to your wife for me.
Will do.
Safe travels.
Thank you.
Look after yourself. Viewers, listeners, another end of an episode of Blighty Talks Bricks comes. Stay safe, take care, and when you walk down the river, just make sure you look after the people on the boats. All the best.